in time. Hopefully, otherwise, I wish. okay. So actually, here we are the Romania specialists already, but nevertheless. So what's our goal? Our goal is to solve, in some sense, n equals 4 Soperangmil theory. And it is a nice goal by the following reason. So at the same time, it's a complicated enough problem. It's in four dimensional. It's fully interacting gauge theory. And at the same time, it has lots of structures which gives us a hope that this goal can be achieved. And of course, if you do things in a stupid way, which you usually do most of time, and I do most of time, then you get a huge mess in the result. But if you eventually find the good questions, as usually, you will get something very nice, and you will uncover some new structure. So there are some games, some rules of the game you have to follow in order to get something nice. And in particular, so our goal will be to compute correlation functions of some local gauge invariant operators. And for simplicity, let me focus on a C2 sector which contains just two scalar fields, X and Z. And then the operators, these are just single trace operators. They can contain any number of X and Z fields, all at the same point in space. Okay, now imagine you want to compute a two-point function of two such operators, like O1 and O2. And in general, you get a huge mess. And so the first rule you have to follow is that you have to consider some particular combinations of the single trace operators. And namely, these are the combinations which diagonalize the dilatation operator. So what is the dilatation operator? Let me give you first several orders. So it is denoted by H, by the reasons which will be hopefully clear, or some of you, of course, know this. So G is a coupling. So let me write G is the square root of lambda over 4 pi, where lambda is a Toft coupling. So what is the dilatation operator? This is 1 minus permutation plus another term plus, and then there are more orders, which are in principle a couple of more orders. They are also known explicitly. But then at some point, the knowledge doesn't exist. so what does it mean? It means the following, that pii plus 1, what it does, it takes, say, two fields at the position I and I plus 1, and interchange them, Okay. And then pii plus 2 will do the same with the next two nearest neighbor fields. So the first rule is that we have to find combinations of the single trace operators, which are eigenfunctions of this operator. So this is operator acting on the single trace operator, right? It will reshuffle the fields, and we have to find particular combinations which diagonalize. So I don't know. One of the known examples is this xz, xz minus trace of xx, zz. So this is one of the example, an example of such operator which diagonalizes this Hamiltonian actually to all orders. And this is so-called Kanishi doesn't move. So how do I use it? So not very smart to start with this, apparently. Okay, now I will be smarter.
After the middle one. The middle one is the best.
In Oxford, they have a nice board. This is the infinite board which you can rotate. Very nice. okay, so imagine you diagonalized this Hamiltonian and you find nice combination like this, for example. After that, you can compute two-point function of two such operators. And the result is very simple. It's just x minus y to the delta, where delta is eigenvalue. So just eigenvalue, and then you find the simple scaling, and the yz, because n equals 4 is a conformal theory, and by diagonalizing the dilatation operator, you automatically resolve the two-point correlators. Okay, so let me do a couple of remarks. First, this Hamiltonian, so it looks nice up to two loops, but then at some point, it is not known to all orders, and the reason is that actually it's not, it's one of the examples of not being a good question to ask what is Hamiltonian to all orders, and the reason is that it's ambiguous quantity and it depends on the scheme you choose to compute it. It is computed in perturbation theory and in principle it's scheme dependent. However, what is a good question is this delta of J, which is eigenvalue of Hamiltonian. And this happened to be non-ambiguous quantity, and this is well defined. And let me give example how it can be solved. So let me have to. So how do you solve it, for example, to the order G squared? So which is one loop order. So at the order G square, you can see that if you drop this term and this, what you get is just the Heisenberg spin chain Hamiltonian. And then it is diagonalized by means of the Beta-Ansatz equation, which means that you have to solve A minus I over L, where L is the total number of the fields. Equal to the product over J not equal to K. So you solve this system of equations, just some polynomial equations, and then energy, the eigenvalue is equal to L plus sum of 2 G square, UK square, plus 1 quarter. Okay, this is what happens at one loop. And now, actually, as I said, it's a meaningful question to ask what is this quantity at any loop level. And it happens so that there is an analog of this expression, which is valid only at one loop, which is valid at all loops. So all loop analog is the following. So in order to do it, I have to define some function x.
Maybe you want to say how many U's you have.
Yeah, number of U's is n, and n is number of x fields. Okay. So now to loops, I define this function x, and in perturbation theory, it's just equal to j over u plus so on. And now I deform this Beta-Ansatz. So the only thing happens at the loops, I just deform a little bit this equation, I introduce coupling inside this equation in the following way. So I compute x of u k plus I over 2 or x of u k minus I over 2 to the power L. Okay, so it's easy to see that indeed if I keep only the leading term, this will give me the one loop result. And then in the right hand side, it is essentially the same. However, there is some annoying multiplier, which is a dressing phase. But fortunately for us, it will not be essential because sigma 2, so I remind, I just want to consider actually one loop today. So it is almost equal to 1 up to high order in G. So for the moment, we can forget about this. So basically, if we want to get a couple of more orders, we just deform the left-hand side of the beta equation. And then the energy is given by the similar formula. It's 2 ij again over x of uk plus I over 2 minus of x of uk minus I over 2 and sum over k. So that's what happens if you want to find the spectrum of anomalous dimensions to a loop. So just modify this term in the beta equation, and you also modify the dispersion. let me define some quantity P, which is just left-hand side of this equation by so it's like energy and momenta. They're related to this parameter u in this way.
What do you mean by energy here? Is it the same as delta?
Yes, yes, this is delta. So in both cases, you see that the beta on that it is this form, just KL is equal to product of some function of two variables, which is just a phase. Like this. So you can see that this is e to the IPL. And this is like a generalization of the quantization condition in the non-interacting theory of some gas of particles. Okay. So this is what is related to the spectrum. And now another question, which is actually not a very good question, but nevertheless, let's try to answer it, is what are the eigenvectors of this Hamiltonian corresponding to this particular, to this eigenvalue, right? So we found the spectrum of eigenvalues, what are the functions? Wave function. And let me again start from one loop case. And for one loop case, and moreover, let me consider the case n equals to 1. So I just have zzz, 1x, and then zzz again. Okay, 1x at some position n. And then wave function, let me denote it like phi, is equal to sum of n plus u1 so power n, and then position n. Then I have to sum over all possible positions of this field X. So notice that in principle there is a trace somewhere outside, but if you put trace, then this will become zero, right? So let me like forget that actually there is cyclicity and stuff like that. Let me open in some sense with open and change. So don't be confused, it's just intermediate step. So I consider the case with this one X field, which corresponds to the case where in this equation n is equal to 1. right? So there is only one u. So I solve this equation for this one complex variable, insert it here, and I get the wave function of this operator, which diagonalizes this leading order Hamiltonian, G squared. Okay, now what about like all loops? So you could say, okay, this is obviously just e to the IPN, right, in my notation. So why don't I just replace this IPN by the desired quantity at all loops? And indeed, for one magnet, that's the case. Wave function is indeed given by the same expression. Position. And this is true to all orders. And this was indeed verified by direct computations using the Feynman diagrams, like a long time ago. So this is true to all loops. Now, okay, this is n equals 1. Probably it's oversimplified case. So let's consider two magnets. And let me use this notation. So now I have two X fields at the position N1 and N2. Right? So let me write something similar. So I first try to do this. And then this. X and 1 and 2. So what's the physical picture behind is that we have some incident plane wave of two particles. Then eventually, if there is an interaction, they will scatter. So from general physics, intuition just tells us that there should be a scattering wave. Okay, and this S is just the right-hand side of Beta equation. So again, I have now two X fields. So now I have two complex numbers, U1 and U2. I solve these Beta equations, insert them into this P, and P is defined here, for example. It's just a log of U plus I over 2 over U minus I over 2. And then I build this wave function. And indeed, so for one loop, this is the case. Okay, so what will happen to, say, to all loops? Again, you can say, let's just replace the momenta by the all loop momenta and the scattering phase by what appears on the right-hand side of Beta equation. The same with the P just given by I over 2 log X of U. So again, the idea to generalize this wave function, let's just replace the quantity, the momenta, by its analog, by its deformation, which depends on the coupling now. Right? Which we know this will work for the bitansatz. This replacement will give precisely what we need. And what happens here is that this wave function is almost correct wave function, except the cases. So it's N1 in principle here sum is ordered. So except the cases when N1 minus N2, the distance between them is smaller or equal to the number of loops. So this naive replacement will describe the wave function almost all terms in this expansion, except just one single term when N1 and N2 are close to each other, say for one loop. And what it results for one loop is that the two loops is that entries in this sum where two axes are close to each other will be replaced, will be multiplied by additional term which depends on P1, P2. So there is an additional modification, so it's not only just replacement of momenta and scattering matrix, but there are also these contact terms, so-called contact terms, the modifications of the wave function for the cases when the two magnets, two fields X, come close to each other. So why does it happen? And we can see that with increasing the order of the Hamiltonian, it becomes less and less local, right? So at three loops, it will start mix the fields which are as far as the two from each other. And this will result in this extra term, which just tells that now the interaction is not like point-like of two magnets, but it's a bit bigger than point-like. Okay, so here, it's like a guess of a delta function interacting particles, a discrete version of it. And here, this delta function becomes a bit broader. And with each order and perturbation theory, it becomes bigger and bigger. And so this function, okay, you can find this function explicitly, say, for two magnets. Then you can repeat the same exercise and for three magnets, for the case n equals to 3. And again, this kind of term, they will be replaced by some another function, now of three momenta of this colliding particle. And so we did this exercise up to four magnets, and already for four magnets, expression, explicit expression for this term, it takes several pages in mathematics. Okay? So this is a really a mess, and this is an indication that we are doing something not in the correct way, not in the most, in the nicest way. And eventually, we would like to know this wave function because our goal is to compute three-point function. Okay, and for three-point function, you really need to know the wave function to this order. So the cure to this is an algebraic so. In this sense, that PI is a tensor network, so very popular. So in some sense, it's some link to the tensor networks. So how is it done? So we define a vertex. This is a tensor with four indices, A, B, C, D, U, and it depends on two complex parameters, u and v. And that is defined as dc plus I minus v minus I over 2. Okay, just let's define this matrix, which is called R matrix. And now this is a very nice building block, especially for the wave function. So if we define now operator B in the Poulenc way, just take L of these vertices, put first index to 0, this one to 1, then we get some operator with many indices downstairs and many indices upstairs. So it's some operator acting on this to the L times 2 to the L operator. And now the wave function I just described to you above is given. Okay, so and I have to specify what is U. U is here. And then you see at each line I can add another complex parameter V, but in this case let me call it theta. So theta 1, theta 2, and I have L legs. like this. So I create this operator, which now is a function of u and L tetas. Okay, so what is this function phi above in terms of this operator? It's just given by you take b of first root up to b of the last root, the product of those b's, and act on the vacuum where all the vacuum with all zeros. Okay, this is a nice way to write this wave function, and the reason is that if you do this, you will get n factorial terms in general, if you consider n magnitude wave function. Whereas here, it's everything is nice, no combinatorics, it's just, if you want one more particle, act again by this B operator. Okay, and actually, you can ask, what are these parameters theta in this case? And the answer is that you should just put them to zero. So if you put this theta to zero, you from the standard structure, you get the wave function. And for example, the picture you can have corresponding to the wave function is this, oh, 0, 0, 0. So this is a kind of so here we will like evolve this trivial vacuum with this kind of partition function, and then we get at the end the wave function phi. This is the last. Okay, so this was construction which gives us the n-magnon state at one loop. It gives us the wave function at one loop. Now, what could be the generalization at, say, all loops, or at least at to one loop? So first, you can suspect that maybe there is some other R matrix, which is now a function of J, of the coupling. So maybe, I mean, you replace here and there everything by x plus and my x minus and so on, and you get the good result. But no, because the R matrix, in order to keep integrability properties, it should satisfy Jahn-Bachstad relation, something else like that. So it should satisfy Jahn-Bachstad, and there is only one solution, basically, which is given by this. So there is no room for deformation of this R matrix. So it's completely fixed by Jahn-Bachstad. So we can't get anything like that, right? At first sight. However, you see there was this full set of parameters thetas, which we set to zero, right? And all those thetas, if you keep them, still all the results you can generalize, and integrability is not ruined if you keep these thetas. So idea is to use this thetas to somehow mimic this deformation, to use this thetas as a deformation parameter for the quantization, which we use to extend this wave function to higher loop orders, like two loops and so on. Okay, in order, let me tell the answer. And the answer is the following. So let me introduce some operation which acts on a function of thetas. So I have, imagine, some function of thetas. It could be, for example, this wave function, right, which depends on thetas, just because each of these vertices it depends on theta. You'll enter here into this coefficient. And the operation is the following. So it is f plus g squared over 2 sum from 1 to L d theta I minus d theta I plus 1 square acting on f plus dot dot dot, and then put theta to 0. So this is so-called, as we call it, a theta derivative. So what I want to claim is that this theta derivative will precisely do the job. It will convert this simple deformation, which was easy to introduce this thetas, into this deformation, which is complicated, into the quantization, into the parameter g, into the coupling. So just by applying this differential operator to some quantity, which you compute at tree level, essentially, just using the same methods as you use for tree level, you should get, I claim, the one loop result. You know, the two loop and more loops if you know this term. Okay. So first, let me tell some properties. Which actually constrains this this construction almost completely. So, for example, if you act by this derivative on a product u minus theta I, boom, okay, and this is the kind of terms you will find. And here, so for one magnon, this phi is precisely equal to okay, so this theta will appear here. If you introduce this theta parameter, it will appear here. And so when I act by this kappa derivative or theta derivative on the, this kind of function, which appears in the wave function, what I get is precisely x plus I over 2 over x over u minus I over 2. So this is the first property. Yes, to the L. So which tells indeed that if I act by this kappa derivative on a single magnon state, where I keep this parameter theta now, I introduce this, and it is very simple to do, then I get indeed the two loop and more loops, if we know now more terms actually, for the wave function of one magnon. Okay, this is first property. Of course, it's still broad class of derivatives, which will give this. And another one is quite funny, but probably it's. So if you have a product of two functions, one is symmetric function of theta, and another is arbitrary function of theta, then this should be the same as acting on them independently. Okay, and that's an important property for the self-consistency. So actually, this could be interesting to find a general function, a general operator like this, which obeys these properties, which we now know only perturbing left or some orders. Okay. So the claim is now that just take this B U1, B UN, acting on the vacuum, let me denote it by omega. Omega is a 0, 0, 0 state. And just act on it by the kappa derivative. And then automatically, this will produce to you all this mass, which I describe you here. Or no, where was it? I don't know. Ah, here. So it will automatically take care about this contact terms, you see? And whereas in this language it was enormously complicated to generate this terms, this contact terms, here it's just a matter of taking some simple second derivative, and it will automatically create you the super complicated function here, C. So, yes? Yeah, it's arbitrary. Ah. Okay, so what I want to say is this is, oh, at least, okay, let me call it all loops, but all loops in the sense that it probably works up to at least 3 and 4 loops, because we didn't check more. So if you want deformed wave function, just apply kappa derivative. So, and this statement is almost correct, apart from some boundary term, because you see this derivative has a property. It is a sum over all, and then we define it in such a way that L plus 1 is equal to 1, right? So if you have this product up to all over all terms, it will give slightly a bit different expression than if it was incomplete product. So what I want to say is that this will be almost perfect or loop function, except for the cases when the magnons, they come close to the boundary. So it is good for these cases. So basically, if you project on this kind of states where z, which starts from z and ends on z, then this is the exact relation. Otherwise, we have to take care about the boundaries, and it happens to be very simple. It's just minus j square, and then roughly speaking, permutation acting between one and them. So after I add this, it will take care about the boundary effects, which is just because, I mean, the periodicity, and so some of these expressions, they are not automatically periodic. But with this term, everything will be perfect. So I claim that just kappa derivative with some minor modifications, very local modifications, will give you the all loop wave function. So any questions about this construction?
But in higher loops, don't you have to correct
with G? Right, so yeah, then probably there will be more. So this actually works up to two loops, to the leading, to the next leading order. So this solves, again, let me emphasize, very non-trivial problem of diagonalizing this Hamiltonian, which before you was able only to do up to like n equals 4. And after that, even if you have 16 gigas of memory, Mathematica will crash. Okay? Now you can do as many as you want, roughly speaking. At least you have some closed, very simple analytical expression with which you can work now. And now we take this very simple analytical expression, very explicit, and compute three-point function. So for that, I consider special settings, which we were using with Pedro, Amit, and George here. And this is actually where all this project was initialized, of computing this three-point function in equals for a tweak coupling, is in this paper. And namely, the settings are the following. So I consider now three operators, so 1, 2, and 3. O1 containing x and this. O2 containing the conjugate. And O3 containing the bars and axes. And so this is O3, this is O1, this is O2. It's a bit ugly picture. And now what happens is, so you have non-trivial propagators only between X and X bar, Z and Z bar. So you can connect this at tree level. This with this, this with this, and here all contractions are only between these. And here all contractions are only between axes. And need one more thing. Okay, so hope you roughly get an idea. So now, in a bit more formal way, I can introduce operator O3, which is operator acting on spin chains. So actually, here I introduce this arrow up, which is the same as 0 or z before. It's probably not very nice, but okay, let me call it 0. So it's 0 to the some power n3, and then 1 to some 10 to the power l3 minus n3. So basically, it just tells that this operator, you see what it does, it cuts some end of operator O2 containing only x bars and replaces it by this and then contract with O1, right? So just formally this picture I can write as operator 1, then operator O3, which will convert some of these two x's, right, and project out everything which is doesn't satisfy this pattern of ZZ, and then contract with operator 2. So roughly speaking, this three-point function is just this correlator of spin chains. So we have two states of a Heisenberg spin chain at tree level. We insert this operator. And the only thing left is that we have to normalize. And this is precisely the three-point function at tree level. Okay, and then there was lots of work how to compute this quantity, because you should appreciate each of these states, as I explained, is a sum of n factorial terms, right? And then you have to take one n factorial terms, another n factorial, contract all of them. And actually what you get as a result of several papers is just a simple determinant. So this is just a determinant of some matrix n by n. This was in a paper by Amar. Which simplified our previous results with Pedro, George, and Amit to just a simple determinant, which is a really a breakthrough in this direction. And actually, in the denominator, all these norms, we already knew that they are also determinants n by n. So it's very nice at tree level. What you get is just very simple ratio of determinants. And that's much, much simpler compared to what you would naively expect by looking on the states, which is a really huge sum of n factorial terms. So it's n factorial square, but at the end it's just determinant n by n, which is really milliseconds to compute if you have some numerical data. Okay, so this is quite complicated to write in the 10 minutes, so let me write the norm, which is also a determinant. So roughly speaking, it is determinant of n times n matrix, which is d phi k over du j, where phi k is just a log of beta equation. Okay, so more explicitly, phi k is just equal to sum theta a plus I over 2, u k minus theta a minus I over 2, a from 1 to l, and plus this matrix part, k to n, j minus I, k minus uj plus I. So you see, it's just log of the beta equation. And then you take derivative with respect to sum of the root. So it's kind of a Jacobian and transformation. So can you see it? Okay, so this is a determinant. Now, this is a three-level result. It's very nice. It's just a determinant, as I said. So can we expect something similar at one loop? Let's see what we have to do to compute this quantity to the next order in the perturbation theory. And there are two types of the contributions when you do the perturbation theory. One is obviously that you have to correct the wave function, right? So contribution A correct the wave function. And this we know how to do, right? I explained to you. This is the way to do. However, there is another contribution B, which takes care about some possible loops. I don't know how to make a good picture. Okay, some loops you can imagine. I'm a bit lost in these loops, but so of course, when you compute on perturbation theory, correlation function of three operators, you have to include loops, right, inside some diagrams with loops. And the correction is some decoration outside, which you just forced to do because you want to get something nice. This is a prescription from conformal theory. So you have two types of contribution. And the second was studied in details like 10 years ago, almost. And So Okuyama in the Zeng. And the prescription is the following. So this results in a very simple prescription. What you should do? Say you have this three operators. Oh la la, I'm very bad with pictures today. So these are planar contractions at the tree level. This is basically this picture here. Just made a bit more properly. And now if you want to take care about, so this is tree level. If you want to take care about the loops, you have to pick this legs at the junction and insert here Hamiltonian, one loop. So see just junctions points where this propagator, this split, from one to another operator, you just insert Hamiltonians. So this is contribution B. Okay, so it looks like a very bad news actually, this contribution B, because if we insert here this Hamiltonians, it will probably completely spoil this determinant structure. It will be much, much more complicated. But let's first do A, okay? This is so let's start from computing the norm. How much time do I have? We started late.
10 minutes, yes.
At least.
Even a little bit more.
Okay, then I can really slow down. Okay, so let's compute the norm at one loop. We just take this, and we have to contract two of them, right? And as I said, there is some property like that. So what we get is something BBBBB times BBBBB and product of two kappa derivatives, right? But this almost equal to just one derivative, kappa derivative, or theta derivative acting on the product, right? So I use this property here. So this theta derivative acting on the product of function is a product of theta derivative acting on each other. So basically, what happens is that this one loop is equal to just three-level norm, which I wrote here. So let me denote it three. So just take this three-level norm and apply kappa derivative. And that's a precise statement. Now, what happens is that all these parasitic terms here, they automatically annihilate each other. And the only thing happens is that here there is some simple scalar multiplier, which is one which is due to these terms. Okay, gamma u square plus 2 gamma u, where gamma u, this is like an energy, this is this expression, plus 1/4. So if you want to compute at one loop the norm, you just apply the differential operator to the three-level norm, and up to some very simple and explicit scalar coefficient, you get perfectly the result. Okay, and imagine doing it in this formalism. It will be complete mess, and you will never notice that some miracle happens. But it's really a miracle that all those contact terms, somehow they are irrelevant when you compute some nice quantities like a norm. Okay, now let's do...
I wouldn't say irrelevant.
Okay. I mean, yeah, they combine into something nice. Something ugly combines into something very simple. That's what happened. Like enormous mass simplifies very much. Okay, now let's compute again this quantity here, but now with corrected states, with corrected wave functions, which I explained. So I keep the same O3. I don't include any loops inside. I just correct the wave function and compute three-level contractions. So this is some problem about spin chains. And now we know this state. So what happens? We can more or less repeat the same trick, namely convert the kappa derivative acting on on each of these states into a total bracket. So what we get is gamma u. So say gamma one. Gamma 1, gamma 2 square plus 2, gamma 2. So again, there is some simple scalar multiplier times just this second order derivative of the three-level result, which is just a determinant. However, on top of this, we get some extra terms. Roughly speaking, 1 minus permutator of L1, 1, 2, and plus 3, similar. So it's easy to see where this kind of terms can originate from. This is just from this boundary effect, which we have to cure by inserting this extra operator. When you compute the three-point, this kind of matrix element of O3, you get this extra terms explicitly, so they don't cancel, right? So result is ugly. But the reason is that we only computed A. Now, if we combine it with B, this B precisely tells that we have to cancel all these ugly terms here. You see, so all this will be canceled with B. So it's minus B. It's minus effect B. So we were computing A. And even funnier, if you now normalize this, if you divide by square root of this, you see that all these ugly factors, they also cancel. So at the end of the day, what we get is that C1, 2, 3 is just equal to, so let me be a bit roughly picking, it's just 3 level, and then take kappa derivative. And no other terms appear. So it's really a very strong indication that this structure is meaningful, and it produces extremely simple prescription for how to extend the three-level result to all loops. Okay. So, and there are many things I forgot to mention. Any questions about this? So, important thing that this was just a determinant, and so the determinant structure, which sounds very like some additional integrability in the story, is preserved if you take this theta derivative. So it will be just maybe two determinants. So the determinant structure is not spoiled. It's as simple as tree level, and computationally it's roughly the same. So, okay, now what we can do, next we can speculate about like higher orders theta derivative. However, at some point we will have to face this problem with the dressing phase, right? Because so far the theta derivative is designed in such a way that it only modifies the dispersion, but it will not create the dressing phase. So this is an interesting obstacle, and hopefully it will be resolved into something beautiful. But for that, probably we will have first to go to all sectors, because this was just SU2. And then hopefully we will see some additional structure, which will help us to take into account the dressing phase as well. And in particular, what we checked is that this kind of relation for the norm, they already very nicely can be generalized to all loops, it seems. At least we checked up to how many? Four loops. And this kind of relation works. And for three-point function, we don't have enough data, because this kind of contribution B, just the loop diagrams for three-point functions, they are not known for more than one loop. So, I mean, if someone is there, able to compute and two loop diagrams, it's very welcome. Right. And this is work done with Petra, which is important to mention, probably. Okay. Thank you for your attention.
Let us send the speaker.